The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, to look at some of the things trending this week, we are joined by Esther O'Mordonoghue, broadcaster and host of the 80% podcast, and also by Owen McDermott, director of the Communications Clinic. And this has been a week in which we've been finding out a lot more about the things that are apparently bad for us. On this programme this week, we have discussed processed foods and ultra-processed foods and how they might increase the risk of cancer. But then today we have news of how shampoo is as bad a health risk as car fumes. Who'd have thought that, Esther, huh?
I know you love shampoo, I love shampoo, Matt. But like,
but
all the things
that
we love.
We have hair for shampoo.
We have very luscious locks, lustrous. We are stunning.
As does Owen.
As does Owen.
Yes.
Fine head of hair, strong hairline. It's all going well for Owen as well. But like everything that we love, it's bad for us, of course, because it's full of chemicals. There's a scientist studying air pollution in Los Angeles found that up to half of particles known as VOCs, and I know you know what that stands for, but I'll explain for everyone else, volatile organic compounds, come from domestic products, including shampoo. And these particles, degraded particles known as PM2.5s, of course, which cause respiratory problems and are responsible for, are implicated in 29,000 premature deaths each year in the UK. So okay, that's not insignificant.
Yeah, but I'm really interested in this because, you know, you do get a lot of people worried about the sort of all of the products that we use. I mean, a lot of people have wondered about using things like deodorants previously, Owen. Now, and deodorants is in this list.
Deodorants,
oven cleaners.
Oven cleaners, deodorants is in this list. For example, though, I actually got a bit of a laugh when I went home to my parents' house a couple of weeks ago. And on the pan, the Teflon pan that came along, there was a warning on the back not to overheat it because the fumes would be bad for the birds, which I thought was a really strange thing for an oven pan. My parents weren't planning on keeping birds in the kitchen. But
what about for the humans?
Well, this is what I was then thinking. It was like the canary in the coal mine, that actually it was an indicator that these things are bad. I suppose there's always, in every year or every decade, there are new things, whether it was asbestos coming through and painting. For example, it is mentioned as well in the piece that professional cleaners also had reduced lung capacity, having inhaling all of these fumes. You would typically, again, hear that of people who were professional or painters using spray paint, again inhaling those fumes, so it's not particularly good. I did do a bit of a Google though to see what is the alternative to the chemically based shampoo, and for those avocado lovers out there, you can use avocado to clean your hair, Matt.
What do you do?
Well,
do you mash up the avocado?
Hold it beside.
Take a
selfie with it, perhaps. Lemongrass, quinoa. Is that how you pronounce
quinoa.
It? Quinoa. I'm from Swords. We're not used to it out there. And a whole load of different other things that you can use as a natural base for your shampoo. I don't expect though, Matt. You're looking kind of physically.
I just started thinking.
I don't think you mash it up in your own kitchen. It comes bottled from health food shops.
Okay, but at the same time, I'm starting to think just how many things we have such a processed. It's society, maybe. And I was very interested in the stuff about the food during the week and looking at, do you need to try and eat more and more of your food that isn't almost manufactured food? And then do you take it further than that in just all of the household products that you have? How much of a danger are they causing to your health?
Well, I mean, I don't know because I'm not a scientist, but I mean, if you took out the products under your kitchen sink, if you can't pronounce half of them, chances are it's not natural. You know, I suppose the aim would be, if you can, just try and reduce as many of the things you have under the sink as possible, like use baking soda, vinegar. There are alternatives that very quick Google will provide you with answers for. And it's just kind of reduce it. You don't need that many products.
You'll remember there was also that piece around the talcum powder and babies, that parents were recommended that they shouldn't be using a particular brand of powder because it was causing a health risk to the breathing of the kids again. And that's a development that has gone on, because I think if you look at talc, was being used for decades and now seen that it had caused an issue.
Yeah, no, there's a huge payout in America over a woman using talcum powder. She got hundreds and hundreds of millions from...
Why?
Because I think it was linked with cervical cancer.
And reproductive
issues. Okay, so all of these things that we're hearing are bad for us. I'm fascinated as well to see that in the United States, McDonald's has decided to take cheeseburgers off the Happy Meal menus. Now, why has that decision been made?
Well, I would say the cynic in me, Matt, would say maybe it's optics. They're anticipating, a ban coming in because they want to reduce. McDonald's said they're taking off the cheeseburger off the Happy Meal menu. But they're still available upon request. So if you want the cheeseburger, you can. And they want to try and reduce, cap the calorie count of Happy Meals at 600 calories. But I had a quick look on my Fitness Pal there, and it says that a McDonald's cheeseburger meal, Happy Meal with fries and a Diet Coke, comes to 539 calories. So
maybe they
actually would need to add,
in the States.
Perhaps, and everything's bigger and better in the States. So So they want to, take the cheeseburger off the menu and a bit to be healthier, but...
Okay, but is this because McDonald's has been forced into it by sort of political correctness, or is this actually confirmation that many people have felt that fast food like that simply isn't good for people?
Well, I think it's all commonly held, Matt, that fast food isn't good for you, but McDonald's don't come into people's homes and stuff cheeseburgers down their children's throats. Like, I think having a McDonald's now and again isn't a bad thing. I think what this shows to you is when you get as big as McDonald's, you can get free advertising for really anything you do. Mm-hmm. We're on now talking about McDonald's.
But in fairness, so many people, I'd say, listening to us have consumed McDonald's at some recent point as well.
And Donald Trump, for example, who hasn't enjoyed a cheeseburger in bed? You know, I think it's a fair piece. And that's why I'd view it that there is a responsibility on people and parents to be able to assess how frequently people, their families should eat takeaways and fast food. And I think, McDonald's are trying to have an initiative here that by 2022 they'll have reduced it by 50%. But there's a big responsibility on people to make a call on when they should eat.
Yeah, but I wonder what the problem is. Is it the cheese? Is it the meat? Is it the burger patty?
It's all of it combined, I suppose. I know in New York they phased out trans fatty acids since 2007, and a recent Yale study has found that there's been a 6% reduction in heart attacks and stroke incidents since then in some New York counties, which is interesting. And apparently in America there's going to be a national ban on TFAs at some point this year. So they're anticipating these changes, I think.
Okay, Emerin Belturbet and Cavan says, I wash my face with coconut oil and sugar and my hair with coconut oil and bread soda. No need to moisturise face or condition hair, as coconut oil does it for you and Mother Nature is happier. But that's really interesting, because even when you have these alternatives to all of these products which are full of chemicals, other people out there who are trying to dupe you and sell you things, such as Gwyneth Paltrow. Has now told women to achieve their leanest livable weight.
Well, hang on now. I think poor Gwyneth's getting a bit of a hard time on this, I have to say now, because my initial reaction when I saw it was, oh, here she goes again. And there are a lot of websites that say the 30th craziest things that Gwyneth Paltrow has recommended, the unbelievable wrongness of Gwyneth.
With lots of products that she sells at massively expensive prices to people.
That is part of an issue. I think in this one, where an article on the website that she owns said that people should be aiming to get their leanest livable weight, the internet went crazy, Twitter went crazy. And I don't think anybody actually had read the article, which was quite sensible, that it recommended people should not go on fad diets because they were unhealthy for themselves, yo-yoing up and down. They should avoid sugary drinks. They should try and eat more vegetables, and they should drink less sugary drinks. Now, they did use the term leanest livable weight, which would give the implication that you should be as skinny as all hell, but that's not what it actually means. The leanest livable weight is the weight at the low end of your set range, and your set range is the genetically determined range of weight that your body generally keeps you at. So I think this was one where people spotted something online and went bananas. And I think maybe Gwyneth Paltrow says some crazy things. Maybe she charges a few bob extra for some of her products. However, there is a problem online in particular with people seeing headlines. They don't even bother reading it. They don't go to the primary source, and they make decisions based off their already preconceived issues.
Was she the one who was trying to sell coffee enemas?
Oh, yeah, and steaming her vagina, for example, amongst other things, and getting stung by bees. Like, we're not, she has done some crazy things. Just in this regard, I think she was getting an unfair rap.
Okay, will you defend her as well, Esther?
Yes, I will. I mean, I know I agree with them. People maybe didn't necessarily read the article. It's an ugly phrase, I think, leanest livable weight. It does sound like she's trying to just, restrict your diet and whatever. But if you read the article written by Dr. Tracy Mann, she's saying, as Owen said, there is a set weight. Basically, the natural weight that your body kind of falls back into when you don't binge and when you don't diet. And maybe getting rid of that expression, it was just basically eat healthy and move a little bit more, like everything. Gwyneth Paltrow's website, if you have the money to spend it on magic dust or whatever she's selling, that's your choice. If the claims you're making are medically incorrect, then she's going to be pulled up on it, which she has. But I mean, if you're rich and white and want to spend your money on ridiculous things, then go for it. That's business.
Yeah, I also see the survey of doctors and trainee doctors have found that 60% of them are too sedentary and that they don't heed their own advice to lead an active, healthy lifestyle. I think actually a few ministers for health in this country would have perhaps fallen into that category as well. What do you make of that, Esther?
I think, like many of us, and who were based in an office, you could tend to, you could sit at your desk for hours and hours and not move your little Twizzlers around the office. And research from the Institute of Technology in Tralee have confirmed that, and focusing on GPs, saying that 60% of GPs and GP trainees are too sedentary, like most of us. And it said that female doctors also were more likely to be inactive than their male counterparts. A sedentary lifestyle, if you're not doing your internationally recognised physical activity of 30 minutes a day, preferably 7 days a week, then you're going to be more at risk for hypertension, type 2 diabetes and some cancers. So just get up and move.
Think about this one again, is this again the advice you get? I mean, for example, you know, I'm part of the sort of the Fitbit generation.
10,000 steps.
Oh, 12,000. I have mine set as my daily target.
Whoa, and not competitive at all.
75 minutes of active exercise. And then I read a piece last week saying, no, it's all nonsense. That what you need is the intense bursts of workouts, and it might only be 2 or 3 minutes of absolutely intense exercise that gets your heart rate up. That could be better for you than doing an hour of walking.
Yeah, well, they've talked about this high intensity training that seems to have a great impact. I would have thought that in terms of the GPs and doctors, it's not untypical to many of us. We just don't get a chance to move around. Even some of the advice I read is actually just go for a walk at your lunchtime for a half an hour, and that'll give you fresh air and a bit of exercise.
It's also good for clearing your head.
Yeah, well, certainly. That's certainly one of the reasons why many of us exercise, is just to get a bit of the stress out and the clarity of thought. I think part of the issue with this, though, and it's again probably a wider thing on health risks, is that people will kind of say, I'll do it at the weekend, or I'll do it again, because the risk is indefinable and in the future. Whereas if it was immediate, defined, and very easy to understand, I think people would grab it quite quickly and go through it. So I think there's probably an issue for all of us here. I quite enjoy a bit of exercise, but the idea of a 10,000 steps and a Fitbit is highly intimidating, or 12,000 for you.
We don't often talk about Australian politics, but they're having a sex scandal in grossing the government down there. It is extraordinary. The Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, has done what, Owen?
Well, Barnaby Joyce has had it off, really, with his 32-year-old staff member on his team. She is now pregnant, and he's skedaddled now away from his wife and four children.
Now, that's a personal matter normally, but this guy has been to the forefront in campaigning against marriage equality, yes, for example. This is supposed to be one of these great God-fearing conservatives.
Yeah, he heads up the National Party, which is the right-wing party in Australia. He's also the fella who made Johnny Depp apologise to the Australian people for bringing in his two dogs. So he's quite the live wire. Malcolm Turnbull came out, who's the Prime Minister, came out saying that his Deputy Prime Minister had made a shocking error in judgment. Since then, Joyce, who is the Deputy...
Sorry, another thing he did, he also gave an instruction to ministers not to have sex with staff.
Oh yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it? You would have thought, do you need rules like that? It beggars belief. But the great thing now is, to make it all the more interesting, Joyce, the Deputy Prime Minister and leader of the minority party in the coalition, has come out and he's gone big, he's gone explosive, and said that the comments made by his Prime Minister are ridiculous, inept, and he's come out swinging, and he doesn't, and pretty much being told that he doesn't like being told what to do. I think if this was in any other country, probably about 15 years ago, he would have resigned. I think in the age of Trump, with porn stars and Playboy models and lawyers paying them all off, I think he'll get through this. It doesn't seem like that big a deal anymore, does it?
What do you think?
Well, I think Owen's right. I think the attitude or the stance that people take, obviously it's like the immediate crisis, and then they go, we're just going to brazen this out. Just be like, no, I'm not going to apologise. I'm not going to resign. You kind of, there's all this pressure to resign, and you should, you've done wrong, whatever. People go, no, I'm just not going to. And if they can hold their will, and if people stop complaining after the news cycle dries up, you know, it goes into the next story, then, and they've stayed in their position, then people will move on and forget about it.
Okay,
but it is, he's a hypocrite. And
well, is that the issue? Because whatever people might do in their private lives, if it's private, if they're personal behaviour is at odds with what they expect other people to do when they're legislating for it. Does that make it a legitimate issue for us to, or for the Australian people to discuss and
well,
wonder about?
I'd say he has a nerve, because he did, you know, talk about the sanctity of marriage, and he opposed same-sex marriage in the name of a traditional marriage, whilst he broke his vows in his traditional marriage and has now separated from his wife of 24 years, had an affair, and apparently this was an open secret, and the press for some reason respected this private issue, and he's also not going to face any consequences, because under the ministerial code of conduct, his current partner Vicky Campion was technically not his partner at the time, and he's living in a rent-free apartment owned by a wealthy political donor. So he's just, you know, doesn't care.
He couldn't write it.
Living a life.
But it again shows that I think not. And I think every time I come into the studio, I mention Donald Trump, but not to bring everything back to Trump. But I think he has set the standard for some of the things that we now just take as acceptable, unfortunately, or people take as acceptable. We've seen some of the issues that he has had over the last couple of weeks in relation to mistresses and former partners.
There's another piece in the New Yorker magazine at present which has more stuff in relation to that, quite extraordinary, and also the fact that he had a lawyer who seems to have paid $150,000 to buy the silence of this woman, Stephanie Clifford or Stormy Daniels, before the last election.
So you may think that Mr. Barnaby Joyce and his team are sitting there saying, you know what, guys, we could brazen this
out, we can get through this.
And who cares?
No, you have a story that's grabbed your attention, Esther, and this is the transgender woman who's become the first in the world to breastfeed her baby after undergoing hormone treatment. Tell us about this.
Well, I certainly think it's interesting. There's a 30-year woman, her partner is pregnant but didn't want to breastfeed, so she was hoping that she could be the breastfeeder when the baby was born. And through medication and breast pumping, she has induced lactation and it was able to sustain the baby for the first 6 weeks of life. And it's remarkable. Yeah, she's the first transgender woman. And yeah, so she hasn't had any gender-affirming surgeries such as breast augmentation or vaginoplasty, but still she's able to perform this function and keep her baby nourished and alive. Yeah.
Things move on. Actually,
yeah, I think it's probably one of those stories, Matt, that when people hear them, they'll say, they'll have strong opinions, some positive, some negative. But I think if you were to look at it and say, well, here's somebody who's going through quite a lot and quite a lot of treatment to show love and affection to their baby, I think you couldn't deny that that's a very positive story, considering that we see in the news or we see or hear that children are born with addictions to heroin, for example, and terrible things occurring to them. I think if you look at this, whether our views are strong positively or negatively, you can't deny that this woman is going through a lot to show love to the child.
We talk about things that are trending this week, and top of the most read in many websites at present is Jennifer Aniston's marriage ending, her second marriage, I think it is, isn't it? Why does Jennifer Aniston's love life command such attention? And this is not just a media phenomenon, because Esther, as I said, it's most read on so many websites. People seem to want to know all about it.
Well, I think, like, you know, we're all guilty of, you see these celebrity couples and you think, they've got it made, they're perfect, they're doing, how are they just living their best lives? And then you see, oh, they're frail human beings and their marriage is falling apart in spite of their millions or whatever. And you're like, oh, well, if they can't make it work, what are the rest of us going to do? I don't know. Yeah, I think her media character that she's been painted in, like, sad Jennifer, she can't find lasting love, bread left of her Angelina, and now Louis, what's she done? Why can't she hold on to her man? I think this is that kind of subtext or that narrative underneath it all. But like, she's grand, she's a millionaire, richer than all of us here combined, living in her mansion, so don't worry about Jennifer, she's fine. It's tragic, it's sad when any relationship ends, but
yeah, but it seems to be this assumption that she's lost out enormously, that she's desperately sad, because who knows, maybe this is something that she wanted, that it was her decision. But then, of course, it all follows again on being dumped by Brad Pitt for Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, well, I suppose that there's a link. I just think Jennifer Aniston's great. I'm rewatching Friends at the minute, and I think that is part of it, that herself and the cast of Friends had just become such a presence in many of our lives in the 90s and early noughties, and people actually had real affection for her, liked her. She seemed very likable, honest, real. She's married to this fella, is it Theroux?
Louis Theroux's cousin.
Louis Theroux's the documentary maker. Yeah,
yeah, they're cousins.
He's the actor, isn't it?
Yeah, Justin Theroux is the actor. And Louis
is
the
documentary. He was in Girl on the Train, wasn't it? Was one of the movies.
Oh, yes. He was, indeed. And I just hope that, you know, no more than any relationship ending, that they're both happy enough with it in the future.
Okay, one final thing. This was a piece in one of the papers during the week. Chrissy Russell wrote in The Independent about nobody giving up her seat to her on the Dart when she was wearing a baby on board badge. What about public transport etiquette? At the moment, if you get on the Dart or the Lewis, you're almost squeezed in like a sardine. Do pregnant women have a problem with people actually showing some manners towards them to actually give them a seat?
Yeah, well, Chrissy, you mentioned in her piece that she had the baby on board badge that Irish Rail now give out. The London Underground had it back in the mid-noughties where it came out and women were wearing it, but they found actually it didn't make much of a difference for people giving up their seats. Chrissy seems to say that actually the main issue was that people didn't notice her because they were all on their devices or the Kindles. I wonder, was there a bit of a... was that really, or do people have a peek up and say, actually, do you know what, I'm not giving my seat, I'll just keep my head down. A friend of mine, for example, used to act like he was asleep on the Dart so he didn't have to give up a seat. I think there are probably, in terms of people, women who are pregnant, you would certainly hope that there would be an element of chivalry on the public transport who would give, people would give up their seats.
Your view on this, Astrid?
Yeah, well, the title of the article is "Chivalry is Not Dead, Just Distracted." So as Owen says, you know, Chrissy said maybe sometimes people have their head down so they don't notice. And sometimes it's true you don't. And I know personally, not that my halo is shining here. You know, sometimes you just don't notice. And then if you see someone, you do hop up. But I think in the age of the individual, people are like, oh, I don't care. I'm sorry for you, love, but I'm just going to, I've got to see now. I'm wrecked. I want to go home. You know, you kind of judge, how many stops is she going to get off in? Do I really need to get up? But I mean, of course, that the right thing to do is let more vulnerable people have your seat, basically.
Esther Moore Donoghue, Owen McDermott from Communications Clinic, thank you both very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.